Okay, hi, this is Tyler. This is episode 5 of the podcast. For this episode, I sat down with my friend Tim Barrett. He's a musician and an audio engineer working in the Detroit area. I initially met Tim at a show in Lancaster years ago, and we've just kept in touch, and I've really enjoyed just seeing him progress as a musician and listening to the projects he's involved in. We touch on 3 of those projects in the podcast, K2, Decliner, and the band that's now known as Perpetual Care. I think throughout the podcast, they are referred to as Benign Appeal. So just make that substitution in your head as you're listening. You can check out any of these projects on streaming platforms, and it was just a real pleasure to talk with Tim. He's such a talented guitarist and brings a lot of creative insight and energy into each project he's involved in. And the one we're listening to right now is one of my personal favorites. It's the song Noise Cannot Be Made by K2. So I'll give you the introduction. Tim. Barrett of K2, Decliner, and other projects right now.
Benign Appeal.
Benign Appeal. Okay.
Yeah. So cool. Those are like the main 3, I guess, right now.
Okay. I have seen Benign Appeal on your Instagram, and now that I say it out loud, I get the like play on words there.
That's cool. That was Carrie. So she used to be the original bass player in Moses.
Okay.
When she left for Columbia, I want to say about 2014, after she graduated from Central, we all went to school together.
Yeah.
And then, so she was gone about maybe two years, roughly, back and forth. And then when she came back, she had started to write a bunch of songs. And then I knew Moses was kind of ending and we were doing like last shows and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, before the guys moved away, basically. And then when I saw Carrie, she was kind of playing her songs as a 3-piece. And then that's when I was like, oh, these songs are really good. I want to be in this band. And
yeah,
so like I kind of took it upon myself. You know, we engineered the whole record here and been working on that. It's kind of been like a long year working on it, especially because it's like on our own time.
Yeah.
And like I have all the equipment and gear to do so, but it's like, sometimes being in a studio, you know, you're like, that forces you to like kind of move quickly when it's like a time thing and, you know, time and money. So it's like, I don't know, I could like sit here and redo stuff over and over again because I'm not wasting anybody's money or time. Mm. It's just been a labor of love of like redoing and then like being like, I think I can redo these tones or like, you know, just really meticulously kind of chipping away at it. So
yeah I relate to that. It is easy to get into that like rabbit hole of like after so many takes or so many runs through of a part,
right,
you start to like hyper focus on like certain parts and how it's not sounding quite the way you want it to. That's tricky. Yeah
And especially like you know, this is like the stuff I went to school for, was recording and audio engineering. And so I basically, after graduating and getting out of school, and I had so much awesome gear and equipment at my disposal there.
Yeah.
And so like we did a lot of Moses demoing there. We did a whole EP there, tracked. And then a lot of it in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years I've been out of school is just buying back up the stuff, you know, that I needed and just like to efficiently record and mix and do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like building your own studio.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah,
Okay. I did not know that you went to school for that. So was it like an audio engineering degree or
what? Yep, it was audio engineering. And then my concentration or focus was music and audio production. Okay. And I want to say about the time we met was, I think I was maybe a semester or two from getting that degree and stuff on with school. Because I remember I was doing summer classes and it was, Mount Pleasant is a very small town. And I was up there by myself in the apartment Nate and I had for, I don't know, maybe a month and a half. And then the day I finished finals for the summer, the next day we left for that 2-week tour.
Mm.
So wow. I was like ready to go on vacation.
Yeah, totally.
So it was fun. That was a really good trip. But
yeah, I remember that show fondly, and I bought your EP, like whatever you guys were selling. You had like a CD. I remember buying that.
It was probably like handwritten, like Twine and stuff they did back then.
Yeah.
I think it was just the Gush EP. I don't think it was.
I think that's right.
What was the Library EP, which was like it kind of inspired and Stephen King. I mean, that was all Nate's thing, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know you went to school for that. So that's cool to know. You're in Detroit right now?
I'm kind of. So I'm in the Metro Detroit area, but I live in Novi right now where I kind of grew up.
Okay.
You know, I'm working full time in audio as well, like in voiceover work.
Oh, nice.
Not actually voicing, but I'm just the person editing and producing all the content and stuff like that. So yeah, my whole trajectory has kind of been, if I'm not playing music, I'm still involved in, you know, the audio production side of stuff. So
that's cool. And it sounds like you have a variety of like things you can do within audio or within like,
I don't do too much live sound anymore. I just kind of got over it.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy editing and, you know, working in Logic or working in software more.
Yeah.
That's where I feel more creative and inspired.
Mm.
You know, live sound can like drive you kind of crazy in my opinion.
Yeah.
Very true. Whether you're the one doing it or you're actually on stage and trying to get your mix right or just have, it's just like,
Yeah.
It can be a headache.
So was your job at all affected by the pandemic?
I mean, we had kind of slow months for a while, but it's a very small company. There's maybe 12 to 13 of us, but I was going in every day.
Mm.
You know, we're all pretty separated in our kind of studio booths, but, you know, half of us were working from home when Michigan had restrictions, and then the other half, were working from home kind of. So, I mean, I wasn't affected, as far as, you know, I've been working the whole time, which I was, you know, very fortunate to be in that position. So
you grew up in this area as well?
Yeah, I grew up in Novi and then graduated and went to school at Central.
Mm.
And then, you know, after graduating, I moved to Grand Rapids, was there maybe 2 or 3 years and then kind of moved back about 2018, maybe.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice. Growing up, what was your like first big experience with music? Was there like a defining moment where it made an impression on you?
I was kind of thinking about this stuff because I wasn't sure what you're going to ask, but I was like, I think I have maybe an idea.
Yeah.
I'm the oldest of three.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have an older brother, and honestly, my parents, they like music, but it wasn't something that was really shared with, you know, in the family. I couldn't even really tell you or have a memory of them kind of showing me or like playing it, you know, specifically in the car. You know, I think it was just whatever was on the radio, but my like first big musical moments were, or like introduction, was just like, honestly, like watching MTV.
Yeah.
I was like 10 years old. You know, I didn't really know how to, I wasn't using the computer yet or really on the internet. And I would just see, you know, at the time what was like Green Day music videos.
Yeah.
Blink 182 music videos, and that was playing literally every day, or like, you know, stuff like Newfound Glory, and that's just what I can remember. And
yeah,
so like Green Day was my first favorite band, which I, you know, is like a lot of people's first favorite bands. And like stuff like Sum 41, just any of that stuff that was always on TV. And so I like, you know, really gravitated to that, and you know, started getting into just making mix CDs and just finding more stuff through well, at the time was like LimeWire and all those sites and Rhapsody, like all these things that I crashed a lot of my parents' computers, probably one or two computers at this point, because I was just obsessed. And you know, I knew pretty early on it was more than just like a casual thing, so I was always interested in like harmonica as a kid, or different bands and singing. You know, I was in choir and stuff. And I really wanted to play saxophone in fourth grade, and I auditioned, and they're just like, no, this isn't gonna work. So like that was kind of discouraging, you know. Like they do like a weird placement test, and I just probably didn't have the breath or whatever needed to pass to be like, oh, this is the instrument that you'll do. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'll stick with choir then. That's totally fine.
Oh man.
And the biggest, I think, defining moment of like what made me want to play or like realize I could do that as a kid was my mom took me and friends to see School of Rock.
Yeah.
I was in fifth grade. And that was just like, that kind of opened the door of, because I just would think music most of the time was like kind of an adult's thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like associate with being a kid and like being in rock bands or just like playing guitar, even like for whatever reason. And when I saw like the main kid who like he teaches how to play and all this stuff, I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, I was kind of mad too, because I was like, if he can do that, I know I could do that. Like 100%, I had that like blind confidence about it. So I begged for a guitar. It might have been like my sixth grade, like Christmas or something. Mm-hmm. I was probably like 11 or 10.
Okay.
And I just made them get me a guitar. And
so that was your first instrument.
Yeah, that was the first
real
instrument I started on, and kind of went from there. And I was just obsessed. It's all I wanted to do. And I was doing a lot of sports growing up as a kid, and I mean, I really loved playing sports, but all of that kind of honestly fell by the wayside once I took up playing guitar. That's where all my time and you know, passion kind of went.
Got you. Did you take lessons?
Yeah, I a lot of it at first was like just figuring it out, just tinkering around. And I think even my mom might have suggested, like, you know, you should take lessons, not because I was like necessarily I was bad, but I just think she encouraged in the way that I would do sports, like that kind of same
you like get better,
right? So I mean, I got an instructor when I was 12, and I mean, I was with him for gosh, up until I was 17-18 years old.
Okay. Wow.
Like every day. And you know, that was like a huge learning experience, but just also informed a lot of my musical sensibilities. And just what I was into and the way I play. Because like I said, I didn't have an older brother that was like, listen to this, you know, or pass down like kind of cool stuff. So, I never was like, I couldn't tell you when I was growing up that I ever felt discouraged musically, which I really, am grateful I didn't have any of like kind of bad experience with that, or discouragement, because everything that I learned new just kind of fueled the drive and fire more, honestly. Like any cool new thing my teacher showed me, or like when it was getting into like musical theory, that was like I wanted to get good at it. I really wanted to get like good at this thing.
Yeah.
Just because I enjoyed it so much, because it was fun. And, you know, I didn't have that like drive with school at all. And, you know, yeah. Or once I found music, it seemed to like that drive went into music and not.
Yeah. Everything school. Else kind of fell away.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
I'm also the oldest of three. I didn't know we had that in common, but
yeah,
I share some of that experience with music of like, just kind of reaching around, trying to see what is out there, not really having any person telling me what to listen to. I grew up in kind of a conservative Christian home. So like,
sure,
we didn't really have MTV or anything like that. And so it's funny you mentioned MTV, because I remember so vividly seeing for the first time the music video for Without Me by Eminem.
Yeah.
And just being like completely like I don't listen to like Eminem now, but I just remember that being like, this is, it blew my mind. It was really,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say to that, granted, you know, I probably turned it on when I wasn't supposed to be like, they didn't know I was watching, you know what I mean? I was
you're like sneaking it in.
Yeah. I was doing this, whether or not I knew this was, I should be watching this or not. Cause they probably would have told me to turn it off, or like, you know, I would buy CDs and always get the parental advisory sticker.
Yeah.
You know, like I made a point to like not get the clean version, or like you'd be at a Best Buy. I remember I would always like, whenever I found a new artist or something I really liked, I would just buy the CD right away. And I'd try and sneak past like Best Buy or like my mom that it's like, oh, this has the label that's like, there's a lot of cursing on this.
Yeah. You wanted the real deal.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so guitar, just like you picked up a guitar and it just like totally got you caught up in wanting to learn it. Did I hear this right, that you said you took lessons every day?
Every week, sorry.
I
might have misspoke, sorry.
Okay, but you were probably playing like every day.
I mean every day after school. I mean sometimes before school, but
yeah.
For the first, because I don't think I started a band until maybe, it might have been right away, honestly. But I mean, I would play like 4 or 5 hours every day after school.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't have much of like a social life, or like, you know, I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't playing sports. I wasn't even really like hanging out with girls or any of that kind of stuff. Like I was like focused and committed to just doing that, honestly.
Yeah.
So
nice. Yeah, I also did not play sports in school, and I think I was driving my parents a little crazy because they said I had to do something, like basically pick something.
Sure, yeah.
And I took piano lessons for a couple of years, and I hated it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, probably from like ages 10 to like 13, I took lessons and just wouldn't practice and didn't really like it. But then, begged my dad to get me a guitar when I was like 13. Yeah. Just started taking lessons and took lessons for a couple years. I didn't really have the experience of like wanting to play it 5 hours a day. So that's really cool to hear. I think I was more just like, guitar is cool and I have a guitar now, so I'm cool. Right. And it wasn't as much about like pushing myself to excel in it or like master it or anything like that. I'd say that came kind of later, but okay. And so when did you write your first song?
I probably put some like lackluster of a song, or what I thought was a song.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in seventh or eighth grade.
Okay.
You know, I couldn't tell you what it was or what the name, I wish I remembered stuff like that, but, I mean, it would have been right around seventh or eighth grade when I was starting to kind of play with other friends or be in bands and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, really early on, and just like simple 4-chord drop D progressions, like barred, you know, on the top 3 strings, that kind of thing. You know, so I was drawn to that stuff, but I couldn't tell you like what it was, you know. I was mostly like mimicking probably those bands that, you know, I'd kind of mentioned, or that idea of like kind of 4-chord power chords, you know, loud distortion and
Yeah.
You know, my first amp was like a Line 6 Spider 3, which I think a lot of kids, that's their first amps. So,
is that the one where you can like scroll through and it's all these different settings that are like wildly different?
Well, that you have different amp modelings and drives. And, but then what I thought was cool and what I started when I kind of, really started to find other bands or like other sounds through my teacher and stuff, was just the effects on it.
Yeah.
Because you could really like customize delays and modulation effects and like reverbs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had, it wasn't like the Pod XT Live, but it was like a, it was almost like a foot controller, like a big, it looked like a pedal board that could communicate with the amp. So I could like basically, you know, customize and make all these wild presets that, you know, are like kind of pedal chains, you know, basically more or less like, you know, so it was like kind of messing around, or I was starting to before I had any sort of pedals. Get into that sort of stuff of like, oh, I want to replicate like this, you know, Pink Floyd sound and like stuff like that, you know, that kind of thing. So that kind of started to pique my interest just in effects and signal processing and that kind of thing. So,
and you said you started a band roughly around I think the same time, seventh or eighth grade?
Yeah, I think my first band was about seventh grade with friends. And you know, we tried to get in the talent show. We didn't get in because our drummer couldn't keep time.
Yeah.
It was, I was so mad. Yeah. So like when I started a different band with my other best friend who also played guitar in eighth grade, and I was like, we're getting in.
Yeah.
This, you know, I was so pissed off about the previous year, and our drummer who I still play with to this day in other projects or, you know, whatnot. He was like a drum prodigy from like, you know, 10 years old. He was like the best drummer in the world. So I was like, all right, cool. I got that guarantee, I think.
Yeah.
So it worked out.
Yeah. Did you made it then?
Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, America's Got Talent kind of thing, but it was just like, oh, you guys are not tight enough for this to like be presentable in the seventh grade talent show. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, and like we didn't even have, me and my buddy who was a bass player, we didn't even have proper amps. We had like those Marshall like pocket amps.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
We can't even be heard by our drummer, let alone an audience. So it was just like, it wasn't gonna happen.
That's so funny. That's so good though. Only in like middle school could that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I played with some guys in middle school and we did the same thing, like tried out for the talent show. And we played a Reliant K cover. And when we finished playing the song, we were like so stoked. We were just like high-fiving. It was, we didn't get in, but we were like, it's our first gig. And it was so bad. I would love to wish I had audio of it or
which
something.
Which Reliant K song did you guys? I'm not too familiar, but I know a handful of songs.
It was one of their like early songs. I think it was Softer to Me. Do you know that song? It's like kind of a heavier, it's angsty, definitely angsty. But yeah, that was one of the bands that like I was exposed to early on.
Well, this is a side note because the reason even I had like some affiliation with that band is because I used to go to this camp, it's called Spring Hill, which I guess was quote unquote a sort of religious Christian camp, but I went because you could skateboard. I started skateboarding from a really early age. And so I was like, oh, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to just do nothing but skateboard. But then like, I kind of have to talk about God a little bit. Like I was totally down, like 100% down.
Yeah.
So, and they would play a lot of Reliant, like, didn't they have or Sadie Hawkins Dance?
Yes.
Right. Isn't that era of that band,
such a banger.
That would play in the cafeteria eating every day, or like if we're on the skate park, that's like what they would blast. I was like, all right, cool, I can get down, I guess, with it. So
it's classic. Blind K, man. One of the ways that I found out about music other than Christian music was we had like satellite TV, and my dad got us this like Christian music videos station called Sky Angel, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. And it was basically just like MTV for Christian music.
Okay.
But they actually had like Me Without You was on there.
Sure.
And bands like Emery.
Or like Tooth and Nail type of bands, yeah, even. I bet, yeah. Like Under Oath and.
Yes, exactly.
That sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was
that's
like.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's totally
that's wild,
opened the
actually.
Door. Yeah. That like my brother and I got really into all those bands. Okay. And it was like great because my dad was like, well, they're Christian bands, you know, it's fine with me. So yeah, that was like,
which
really
is
awesome.
Wild because like even any of those bands, I feel like that wasn't really pushed, you know, by them.
Yeah.
I guess necessarily. I feel like even, and Nate probably could speak to this more, you know, with being a Aaron Weiss fanatic.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, as lyrical kind of descriptions discuss a lot of that stuff, but like I don't know if that was ever projected by the band, or at least I didn't feel that way when I got into them.
I agree.
You know, and I feel like they for a long time maybe or like years after were trying to like be detached from a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I get the sense that it was like a like the label affiliation that made everyone think that they were like Christian. But yeah, like in terms of like explicit lyric content, I don't feel like that was ever something that was like totally obvious.
Right.
If anything, more subtle, and like if you were looking for it, you could find it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, anyway, my parents were all cool with it, and I still listen to Me Without You.
Yeah, me too. I mean, honestly, I was looking forward to a lot of us friends were looking forward to those two tours. I mean, one was a brother sister tour.
Yeah.
And one was, I think, the farewell tour.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yep.
Like I was gonna buy tickets, and then honestly, it was like right before COVID happened, I believe.
I think you're right. I think they rescheduled it. They're gonna like have it this year or something.
I was kind of like I was worried because it's like a band that's already gonna end.
Yeah.
And then like, I mean, to be honest, if it were me and I was in that same position, I'd be like, I think then that's it. Like,
yeah,
it's gonna happen. Yeah. Like, why? But that's awesome. They're gonna honor that. It looks like so. That's very cool.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, because we were talking about it all for months. Like friends of I in the Midwest or in Michigan.
Yeah.
We were all gonna go to those shows. So.
Yeah. Hopefully you still can.
Yeah.
So you've started playing shows again recently.
I played. Last Saturday was the first show
with Decliner.
That was our first show outdoors. That was kind of a crazy experience.
Yeah,
to be honest, it was. I didn't know how to feel about it, to be honest. And I'm still kind of like, you know,
like
how I feel about it
in terms of like safety.
I think that, but then also just like, the emotions of being able to play live music again.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I kind of like got bummed out the day after because I was like, I just want to keep doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really know at, you know, which rate to I'll be doing that at, you know, right now. And, you know, a lot of the booking companies that I know in Michigan, like Fusion Shows and Audio Tree and stuff, they're all booking and like have been doing kind of outdoor shows as well and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. It's like hard to get, kind of gauge like, you know, it just seems like it's happening more and more. And I think at least in Michigan, I think people are just kind of wanting to experience that and kind of are ready for it to kind of be back full force.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it seems like it's a slow, like, rollout, you know, like no one's.
Well, every day I'm also seeing like more tours being announced.
Yeah, that's true.
Like literally every day it's like somebody's announcing a new tour or going on tour either this summer or like, you know, even as early as September and stuff too. So
Is that something you're planning on doing?
I would like to. I haven't really talked about it in full with any of the bands I'm in. I mean, there'll definitely be more shows regionally, but I don't know if any of the groups are in the position to like go on tour just yet.
Yeah.
I think, you know, once we build kind of more a solid home base, then maybe we could explore that. But I don't think right now, no.
Yeah, got you. Yeah, I saw videos from the Decliner show. And then also K2 played like a...
It was a like a... It was kind of... I mean, it was very low-key. I wouldn't even call it a show. It was... our friend was kind of having like a pop-up art sale kind of thing. He was moving, and so he had friends of his who are vendors kind of sell stuff. And, you know, it wasn't like a crowd. It was just...
Yeah.
You know, very... I don't know, maybe 20 something, 25 people.
People hanging.
Yeah, that was like my first actually playing live. And it was, we played for 4.5 hours.
Whoa, geez.
Yeah. Which by the end of it, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Never again.
But it was a good way to like
shake the dust off or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Grease up the hinges.
Basically. Yeah, 4.5 hours of greasing the hinges. That's pretty
good. Yeah. So I was like, all right, if I could do that, I'm good to play any other type of set. So
man, I wish you guys were local or that we lived in like the same area, because I would love to see a set. I really loved every aspect.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
Thanks. Yeah. All that stuff's been kind of pretty new. For me, because I didn't, you know, I liked like electronic music, but I wasn't like producing it, and making it, not even really in school. You know, my partner, music partner in that, Steve, we've been playing together since, oh man, we were like 15 years old.
Whoa,
we were playing in bands, like DIY bands, like when we were both getting into like American football and math rock and stuff, like he was a bass player. We also had the same guitar he was a bass and guitar teacher, but we both had that same teacher like extended amount of years. And you know, so we had like a really strong kinship early on, and did a lot of that DIY stuff together and playing houses and stuff. A lot of that was with him. And you know, he went to U of M for kind of the same thing, was audio production and kind of design.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. And so he was like simultaneously working on his chops while I was doing the same thing. And
we would
play shows together sometimes, or like he was in college bands and I would you know, kind of improv and come in and just like basically is like a, like almost like a jazz gig type thing, like show up, learn the material, and then go play.
Whoa.
Which was awesome. I love doing that. You know, a lot of him and I growing up was improvising. That's honestly, that's like one of my favorite things to do in music.
That's awesome.
I really love being able to do that. And that kind of has always been a lot of the forefront of what I do.
Yeah.
Especially with like K2, a lot of that's rooted in improvising, and whether it's live or in a recording setting. And the Decliner stuff, I've gotten to do more of that too. So that's really cool. And, you know, a lot of the Moses jams and songs that would become the album was through improvised parts or improvised riffs I would bring in. And then sometimes things got fleshed out that way and stuff. So.
Yeah, I admire that. That's like a very specific skill set within music, right? Like improv. Yeah. I feel like, I don't really have that naturally, but I do love that, like especially in jazz and just other genres of music where improv can add so much.
It just helped me, like, you know, and this is where I feel like, you know, for me starting out and when I was getting into music, it wasn't really about songs at the beginning. It was just more about playing and like learning how the guitar works and the understanding of it. But jamming was so fun, and just like improvising, because that was a way to like learn what I had applied and like get better at learning those techniques and sort of tools. And so I would like, I didn't care if any, like the other friends of mine were good or not. I just was like, I'll play with anybody.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, you know, free expression, and I was free to play however I wanted to, or how I felt at the time, regardless.
Yeah.
So that was always fun.
With K2, do you, and what did you say your partner's name was?
Steve.
Steve. Are you guys both working like the synths? Because you use a lot of analog.
It's kind of changed a lot. When we first got together and when I moved back into the East Side, we had been talking about doing stuff during school, and you know, we knew at one point we were going to do it again or like play together.
Yeah.
You know, cause we had always text about it or call each other and have these kind of conversations. And then when I moved back, that's when we kind of started to try and workshop what we wanted to do. And, you know, I just had a, you know, what I've always had is like guitar and pedal boards and, you know, I'd kind of dabbled with electronics briefly, more so with just software, with not really having any sort of understanding for it. And I'm honestly still kind of learning it. But he was so efficient with Ableton at this point, like producing, you know, in that software, you know, we did a lot of stuff that was just me improvising with guitar or like actual guitar lines with a lot of just stuff we made using software synths.
Yeah.
Or like the only synth he had at the time was, I think the Mini Log, you know, the Korg Mini Log, which is really powerful synth. You know, you can do a lot of stuff with that. And then as we kept playing more, I also had a Roland SP-404 sampler.
Okay.
So we used that to like trigger loops and that kind of thing. And
yeah,
you know, various kind of Korg drum machines. Because with the electronic stuff, like we wanted to play live, you know, neither of us have like a desire to necessarily like be DJs, which is like a lot of what this world is. And
yeah,
what scene we're kind of a part of, especially like with Detroit and the history of that, but like being the background we have of, you know, improvising and just like, you know, over 15 years playing our respective instruments, that's just been the goal or always the focus. So he's then in the last probably year or 2 years of us doing the project and just developing more of a live set, he got into more hardware, like modular synth stuff, and buying up all that kind of gear, like a lot of that gear. And but then with me, it was getting more into exploring sampling, but sampling myself. Like, you know, I've always had a giant kind of pedal board set up, but like being able to kind of do more of the looping stuff I'd always be doing in bands or like using more as a background is like now that was able to be at the forefront of what I was doing. So it allowed me to take up a lot of space that way. And a lot of some of the other stuff we'll do is running the guitar signal into the modular stuff and then patch that in. Able to kind of like generate synth tones by what I'm physically kind of playing and stuff. So
Very cool.
You know, it's always kind of changed, and like, you know, we still do like some software stuff, you know, or like a hybrid of it, kind of just what we're kind of into, or you know, what we're kind of feeling, or what the song might or composition might kind of dictate at the time.
It sounds like there are many variables that like you can just change one and it completely changes the way you're like approaching writing.
Or just like, because it's, there's, you know, you're patching all these modulars and, you know, it's like a signal flow or signal processing. So like just by taking out one cable and plugging it into something else allows you to get all these kind of different results. That I wish I could speak more to the technical aspect of modular, but I'm like, a lot of this stuff has been brand new for me as well. So kind of just been learning as I've gone, which is why it's so great to work with him again, because you know, we kind of balance that sort of stuff out with each other and just understand each other musically and what we're trying to do compositionally. Because apart from just like the more breakbeaty or kind of like Aphex Twin sort of stuff, I feel like we try and approach, we do a lot of ambient music too. You know, I would say that's like kind of half of what we do.
Yeah.
You know? Or like that element is always kind of present in the work, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When you guys work on new songs, do you work on them independently or do you do that together?
Sometimes I would say in the early releases, you know, he might send me a track or like an idea, and then it was like, oh, this is already kind of perfect.
Yeah.
And then I would just kind of add the icing to the cake, or like, you know, I would try and produce something, because I actually don't use Ableton. I'm strictly a Logic person.
Okay.
So I would maybe make something on Logic and then send him that, and he would like really get the idea or understand it. But because I'm not the greatest drum programmer, and he's got just years of more experience in kind of electronic production rather than like recording bands and recording, you know, that's where my kind of forte, I think, is. He could take what I gave him and then interpret that in a much better way, or more creative way, I think.
Okay. So,
but for the most part, the last three or four releases was all of us just working, you know, both of us working together.
Okay.
Because quarantine actually allowed us to work a lot.
Yeah.
Because that's all we really did was just me and him would just hang out and, you know, kind of do that. We probably put together in the years four different EPs and then a full length ambient record.
Wow. Yeah.
So we were busy.
You're hustling.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the benefits, I feel like, of quarantine. Not that I mean, not that any of that was really positive, but that it like opened the door to spend more time on stuff like that. And I feel like some people had really great creative output.
Yeah. I also think too, this is the first like duo project I've been in.
Yeah.
And it seems like compared to when I would be in bands, or I am in bands with like, you know, four, maybe five people.
Yeah.
Like you can really have more. And it's not that we don't have confrontation. We do, and we both are very opinionated about it and can like really butt heads about it. But like, I think just the efficiency is like we move fairly quickly through things, or like, or, you know, there's nothing really holds us up, I think. And
a duo is an interesting dynamic compared to like a traditional band. Yeah.
Right. That's, I see what there's, you mean. It's, there's like, there's less room or less, nuance, or like kind of potentially having to conform to three other people's opinions on what it is you're doing or what it should be that you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice, I will say.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Yeah. With Decliner, do you guys all write together too, or is that more like just a few people?
So Steve plays bass in that band as well. He's the bass player for that. It kind of started, I mean, that band came out of him and me wanting to do something not as serious, or not like K2 is like very meticulous in the way that it's constructed and the way the compositions are kind of put together. And, you know, we always wanted to do something with him, you know, me playing guitar and him playing bass, because that's how we grew up playing. And this was sort of the way to do that. So we had kind of composed jams, you know, with the idea of like wanting to do like this sort of new wave post-punk thing, which that was like stuff I was always into growing up and in college, and I wanted to be in that kind of band. But kind of with some of the same rules that we kind of applied with K2, or just like the idea of like repetition.
Yeah. And
like, you know, kind of, you know, he plays a lot of the same sort of just like rolling bass lines, you know, but it allows me then to, and our singer as well, Rob, to kind of deviate a lot. Mm-hmm. And there was a band, you know, Public Image Limited.
I've heard that name.
It's Johnny Rotten, who was the Sex Pistols. It was the band that he had formed afterwards. And they would do that kind of thing of like 10-minute kind of compositions, that was like sort of this dance punk sort of thing, like, you know, that had definitely an influence on like LCD sound system. Or stuff like what else? Even stuff like Interpol, I guess.
Yeah.
But like a lot of that, their songs, it wasn't really verse chorus sort of stuff either.
Right.
You know, it was just like here's a bass part or a bass riff, and then the guitar is kind of you know, kind of droning or like has a lot of high gain and kind of just kind of weaving around what Johnny Rotten would be kind of just like word vomiting almost, you know, it wasn't like very connected sort of melodies even, to be honest. And so that's like kind of what I wanted to do for this sort of project.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause they like K2 and Decliner are very different sounds even. And, but even you're saying like also differences in like how you approach the structure of the song or like the execution of the song.
Yeah.
That seems like it'd be a good outlet at both ends, you know, like for whatever you wanted to work on.
It's great. I mean, the Kleiner stuff, cause it's like, I can, it just allows me to riff, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being only the one guitar player in that band, and a lot of the bands I was in college and after was always two guitar players. So it's like, I knew what my kind of role was either as the lead guitar player, or like what the other guitar player was doing rhythmically
or
as a rhythm player. So like this, being that there's only just me as a guitar player and a bass player who's just like kind of really keeping it in the pocket allows me to really deviate and kind of, you know, if like the drums, cause we use a drum machine that doesn't really change either.
Yeah.
The bass part, it allows me to kind of develop and push the song, you know, different ways just because of riffs or parts I bring in and out like very quickly, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's really fun for me to do and stuff.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you write stuff yourself at home? Like, do you have things that you work on for another project or just for you?
So, I mean, other than those two bands and the Benign Appeal record we've been doing, I mean, I have a bunch of solo stuff.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of Tim stuff that kind of has spanned all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
When I moved back to Novi, the first thing I did, I challenged myself to do like this song a day thing. So I did that for about like 2 weeks maybe. And I would just basically force myself to, you know, sit, write, record, track everything in one session and then move on.
Whoa. Yeah.
Kind of thing. And that stuff was like more folky, more like kind of Yo La Tengo sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe even like kind of lo-fi sort of Alex G kind of thing.
Yeah.
More or less.
Cool.
So I have like stuff like that. And, you know, I've wanted to do like an 80s pop kind of thing or, you know, or just like more of the indie rock stuff, you know, soundscapey thing that I've done since Moses. And, you know, none of that's really seen the light of day. But I'm still always just like working on different things or trying to figure out what it is I want to do for myself and just be very sure of that, you know?
Yeah.
So
does some of that stuff that you work on at home find its way to the projects you're involved in? Like,
maybe some of the like textures or just sounds, but not really the material. Not the material really.
Got you.
So
do you like structure writing time in your week, or how does that, do you kind of wait until you feel like writing to sit down and work on something?
I mean, I think for me, it first starts just like plugging in to guitar, and then, you know, sometimes I don't like just committing to tracking and like plugging into the interface. It's like, that's what I love about like having loop pedals and stuff like that, you know, and I pitch shift pedals to like emulate a bass part. So it's like where a lot of it, I think, starts for me is like, I'll come down here, I'll just practice or play guitar. And then, you know, I might have a riff that I really like or a drum kind of groove. And then, I mean, honestly, I'll make like a loop on the pedal board and then kind of overdub a second guitar and maybe a bass part.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you can see the kit back there. Yeah. I'll just start wailing away for like 15 minutes on the same loop, just going over and over in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes something sparks out of that. Sometimes it's nothing, but it's for me, it's like a great way to practice and keep chops up, but yeah. Like just work on, you know, new ideas. And if I'm not feeling it, then it's just like, oh, okay, I can erase and try something else, you know?
It's like no pressure.
Yeah. It kind of cool. It depends, because it's like for the more acoustic or like folk stuff I was doing, or like kind of alt country stuff I was really trying to do, that was like more sitting down and putting together a song.
Yeah.
I would say in the traditional sense, or like writing on the acoustic, starting that way and then building up the arrangement, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the big thing with like me and being into recording and studying all that is I do a lot of writing as I record. Like that process is very simultaneous. I don't know how it is for you, if it's like you just write the bare bones song and then kind of add to it. But I might start with an acoustic guitar and then I'll grab the bass and then add that, or add the guitar part and then like loop a certain section. And then that inspires maybe another section. And so I'm kind of just like putting together a puzzle piece or something.
Yeah. I do relate to that, kind of the song informing itself, like as I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely like that. I would say I never have a song completely written out. Like when I sit down to record it, it's always part of the process of recording.
I mean, but you're such a good lyricist. Like, do you write a lot of words just in general? Or does that come after the
music? No, words are usually after.
Wow. And when I listen to your music, I wouldn't get that impression. Because honestly, I don't think I'm much of a lyricist at all. Like, honestly, it's always been like music first for me. And that's why I think the solo material or things I've worked on my own is not really seen the light of day, because it's like I really have to commit to that part about it, and I think I struggle with like not wanting to come across as like phony, to be honest. Especially with lyrics, because like that was growing up, that was like sort of an afterthought. That wasn't something I put time into, or like, you know, it was either just about the guitar or about like the guitar specifically, or the know what I mean, rather than like, oh, what do I need to do to craft like the full, what a song is.
Yeah, the lyrics usually come last. And I forget who like said this. There are some artists I heard say that like lyrics should fit the emotional core of the song, or like you want to identify what the like instrumentation is saying, or like what that feeling is to you, and then try to craft something around it. So typically I do just try to do that. But I think in terms of releasing stuff and feeling really vulnerable about it, I think that is kind of ongoing for me. But initially just starting to put stuff out and choosing to like the desire to put it out outweighed the fear of like people not understanding the words, or it not like coming across the way I wanted it to. And thankfully I feel like I haven't thought about it too much since then. So
that's one thing. When I first saw you and then found your music online, and it was it's what now I think you refer to as like the comp, but I think when I remember finding it, or like the 2012 to 2016.
Oh, yes.
Which I think it was packaged or released as like albums.
Yes.
But then did you take it down, and then it kind of got Far Out and what else? Boardwalk.
That's exactly right.
Those like were your first songs that or Burning House. Those were like your first songs I really, really liked a lot.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like after that you were just kind of you were putting out stuff a lot.
You're right about the repackaging. That was those were all separate albums and like EPs. Right. And I had started putting stuff out on Bandcamp in like 2012. So I put out like a bunch of EPs and stuff and a few, maybe like one album or maybe two albums. And then when I moved over to Spotify and like started putting stuff on there, I just figured it would be easier to put it all on like one big thing.
Is that how like you got a lot of the track? I mean, from just from my perspective and seeing, is that how a lot of the traction you got on like newer releases happened?
I think on going to Spotify definitely started that, that happening. And I have one song.
I love you. I love that song. It's a great song.
Thank you. That one got put on a playlist and like completely skyrocketed my audience. And
That's great.
Yeah, it was so good. And now thankfully, like I do have a decent listenership every month. I'm super grateful to have that, and it's cool. I think just putting it on Spotify and giving it time, because it definitely didn't take off right away. And honestly, it's kind of like, it kind of goes up, or like it went up and then kind of just like plateaued a little bit. So now
I feel like, and I don't know if you feel this way, that just the kind of commitment to releasing stuff and the way that, like, you know, I don't want to compare it, or just like the way that, you know, Alex G used Bandcamp to put, I don't know, it was like 5-6 albums that nobody heard of, nobody knew before he signed to Domino.
Yeah.
But then you had this whole body of work that, like, once people got into it or he kind of got a following for it, it's like, oh,
yeah,
look at all this music that exists now.
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, I feel like people could appreciate that more, or like it was more exciting to know. Yeah. It's just like, oh, it's not just one album. I'm going to listen to it until I'm either sick of it or move on. But like, you had a whole body or collection to like obsess over.
Right. You know? That was always the thing that drew me in. When I was just listening to music and not writing anything for myself, I loved when I like found an artist or a group that had a huge body of work that I could just dive into.
Yeah.
I think that's what I value more than like trying to like write one hit song or something, is just
after
like
another.
Yeah, just like I'm interested in the long-term investment of writing songs. Mm-hmm. Like I'd like to do it my whole life, and that's kind of why I have tried to keep it pretty attainable, like easy, low overhead. I just want it to be something I can work on long term. I listened to a lot of Bonnie Prince Billy when I was starting to like try to write music or put songs together, and that really like emboldened me. His music, especially his way of recording and just like putting stuff in there that feels imperfect to me, because I am such a like perfectionist in ways.
Yeah,
it was basically just like, hey, you have permission to record it in one take and put it out, like you can do that if you want to. So having that
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I've been trying to unlearn and learn that.
Yes, it's hard. It's hard. I feel like I go backwards, like as time goes on I get more meticulous about certain things.
But
it's just something I try to come back to. And I think for probably people like us, I think I can say that, like people who are more just like very detail oriented and really focused on it, it's nice to have the other side where you can just not be so uptight about it and realize that the message will probably get across with or without the perfect like guitar part, you know?
Well, and just realizing at the end of the day, it actually doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and I've like tried to really instill that in my brain, because it was like, oh, being in school, so it's like everything has to be good.
Yeah,
it's all like everything's evaluated and critiqued.
Oh, and yeah, like, totally.
You know, I didn't really feel that growing up while taking lessons, but like I wanted that perfection. I was like, I want to be good at this. I want to be able to do all these, like, you know, things and techniques and blah blah blah. So like carrying that into school, then carrying that throughout college, and then in bands, you know, where I was like, we need to keep practicing. We need to practice like X amount of days, because I want to be this tight.
Yeah,
frustrated at shows if somebody messed up or like mistakes happen. Like, Oh, dude. I mean, sometimes it would like ruin a show for me.
Yeah, I believe it.
Like it was bad. You know, to the point of where with like the decliner, you know, we just made a record.
Yeah.
And Steve, you know, he kind of feels the same way as I do, or like kind of had the same sort of perfection struggles growing up as well. You know, where we went in to record this EP, not knowingly, you know, Omar S, who put out our record, you know, he asked us to come to a studio. He doesn't have a computer. He just records into a analog desk, analog board.
Yeah.
You know, all just faders. And it's just, it's a digital console too. It's not, you know, it's not an actual like Neve kind of old school board.
Yeah.
And, but like, there was no click tracks. There was no, overdubs. There was no punching in. It was like, you know, what the first or second take is what was on this EP. And I had a hard time accepting and living with that. Cause we originally, we thought we'd maybe go demo with him.
Okay.
You know? This was just kind of like a preliminary meeting sort of thing. And then he's like, oh, okay, let's just record some stuff. And then in 4 hours, we did all the guitar, or the guitar, bass, and the drum machine that was all tracked live. And then we did all the vocals. And then he's like, okay, so you guys want me to put it out?
We're like,
what did we just do? You know what I mean? Because like, even the structure of the songs, like I was kind of saying with the Public Image and like that sort of stuff, they were just jams. They were like things that we committed to what the songs were then and there.
That was it.
That wasn't discussed. It was just like, okay, we'll just play what we have.
Wow.
And now we're committing to it. But like, there's mistakes on there, man. There's like, you know, things that I have a hard time like sort of
being cool
living
with.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, okay, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like his attitude about it. Like, was like, oh no, I want to do this raw. I want to do it kind of grimy and like,
yeah,
like commit to it. And like, that's it. Like, don't. And maybe if I knew we were going to make a record, I would have even been more prepared in my mind, maybe, or played differently, or played with more sort of like preparedness. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's like, that's what happened. So
there's something about that though, that I feel like there's like within that limitation and that like one or two takes you had, that like, yeah, who's to say this?
Well,
not
that's
like
what
a
I'm
legit thing,
right? And that's what I'm trying to come to terms with
tell yourself,
especially in recording, or like when, if people are liking it or you know whatnot, and like know that, oh, I don't have to, it doesn't have to be this like laborious thing for it to be good, or what I constitute as like being good, you know?
That's cool.
That's definitely, that was a big learning experience for me.
Yeah, definitely. Cause if you're working on stuff at home, you can take as much time as you like with it.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I'm saying is that's even like with this Benign Appeal record, you know, we've been doing for a year now, it's 10 songs, but like, I think there's pitfall. I was saying to Kara, I was like, I wouldn't do this again, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, and I think just for this band particular, and like what our next record would be, because again, I think there's something about, you know, being on a time crunch sometimes,
like
being in a studio, knowing like you need to go to get it done. That kind of lights spark to like kind of bust it out. But bust it out to the best of your ability, and in a way that's like you're satisfied with too.
Yeah, definitely. When you don't have that deadline or like that stopping point, that process can just go on.
It can go on forever.
Indefinitely. Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, the guitars, you know, those took weeks, but we're still trying to finish up vocals, or like finish up, you know. So
that's something I can really trip myself out about at home and like working on songs, is because like I could just never be done with this. Like I could keep layering, and you know,
right. Yeah.
It kind of helps to have like some kind of deadline or a sense of like, okay, when I do this, then it'll be done.
Yeah. I also, I think too, that's what I love about being in multiple projects right now, is it kind of allows for different styles of playing, different techniques, but then just also different approaches that, you know,
oh yeah,
fill all sort of kind of itches I have, or
yeah,
you know. So it's like everything kind of has its place, you know, where it's like I was saying with K2 is very meticulous, very to the T and specific, but then like Decliner, it allows it to be free and open. Yeah. And like, you know, we don't play the songs live the same way at all. I'm like, you know, doing different riffs, or like, you know, we're able to improvise or kind of mess with the structures in live setting. And
yeah,
you know, so it's like the record can be one thing, live can be another thing, and sort of that sort of thing. So that's cool too, that it allows for like different sort of interpretation. And you know, Moses was the same way. There was like riffs when we made the new mood record with Jonathan Hape, where it was like, he said it too, he's like, you know, you guys are playing like these certain riffs, but like in 2 or 3 months when you're playing the songs live, you're going to be playing different parts. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, again, coming from like somebody who loves to improvise, or like, you know, kind of explore that. Like, I'm like, oh, I want to play this part, or like try this thing out, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I liked that because it allows the songs to evolve, you know, besides just like what's recorded.
Yeah.
I really like that when they're able to like, and some of the songs even changed after the fact.
Yeah. You know? They can like progress. There's like room to change them.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if you're playing them a lot live, like it's no fun to just replicate a recording over and over.
No, I can't do that. I don't like that at all. I've never really liked that.
Yeah.
And I've played in some bands that it was like that. But it just, for me, it doesn't do too much.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I hope this question makes sense, but
sure.
We're talking a little bit about like the philosophy or the mindset behind writing and recording. Were there artists or like even creative people who have inspired you pretty heavily, like as you work on music or as you work on like writing in general? Does that make sense? Are there people whose like philosophy of writing have inspired you, or whose approach you've kind of adopted for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the big one, and it's always been the one, is just like Thom Yorke and Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that from an early age, and you know, that was like pivotal.
Oh yeah.
In my, just like my songwriting, the decisions I make, and just my philosophy on music, that kind of like, I don't know, spawned a lot of different stuff for me. And in terms of like the way I think about songs, the way I think about song structure, and just like, you know, I think the biggest takeaway was also just like, you know, when I look at their body of work and seeing that progression,
yeah,
you know, that was like a big thing. It was like, okay, if I do this one thing on this record, then I want to like push myself to do something differently, or at least attempt to, you know. I've never like had a desire, like naturally just want to like, okay, well, I did this type of song or wrote this thing, people like that, or, you know, they were into it, so I'm just going to keep doing it. Like, I don't know how to, I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everything's always kind of been with the goal of like getting better or progressing in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. Whether and not being afraid to push it and,
yeah,
like have it sound totally different.
Yeah. Even if it's like at the expense, and I don't even think about it that way, because like, I feel like you have to, you know, I'm not on a platform like any of those artists. So it's like, I don't really care, you know, what other somebody else is going to think of. Ultimately, yes, you want people to like what you're doing, but like,
yeah,
that is,
you're not going to lose your like Fender sponsorship over it.
No, exactly. So that's always kind of kept me motivated or had that drive to like keep pushing forward and try different stuff, you know. So yeah.
Have you listened to any of the new project that Thom Yorke's involved in with Johnny Greenwood and some
other guy? The
trio? Yeah. What I watched
it's called The Smile.
Yeah, that's right.
They just debuted at Glastonbury. Like, it was kind of like this parachute tent. Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But like, I'm biased because I'm going to say no matter what any of those guys put out, I'm going to say it's great. So it's you know, even if I like might not think it's as good as something else they've done or like, I'm still going to be excited and enjoy it.
Yeah.
No matter what, you know, when you have like that sort of
that
dedication to an artist or just like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? You're going to check it out no matter what. I'm sure, you know, you have probably have the same artist for somebody else.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? That.
Yeah. You're just like tapped in and you'll listen to whatever they put out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like Nate with Me Without You and stuff like that. Like, you know, so.
Yeah. Do you have a preference between recording and playing stuff live?
That's tough. I feel like I go through waves of like, if I'm working on studio stuff and like recording a bunch, eventually I like get burnt out. Yeah. Like if I'm like really grinding for months on end or whatnot, you know, like right now, that's kind of how I feel. It's been now that's been a year of just recording and not playing shows. Yeah. I don't really want to record anymore.
Yeah, right.
Like it was like busting, you know, and hustling a lot when quarantine first started and like putting out and getting all these records and releases kind of lined up.
Yeah.
And then doing a whole new project in the middle of that too.
Yeah.
And then also doing this benign record, and we got a lot of work done during COVID as well that I'm just like, I don't want to track anymore. I don't want to like be in this like
no more inside.
Just like this cocoon of a workspace, because like you can really like I can really lose my sense of reality and stuff in that zone or just like the outside world.
Yeah.
So I really have an affinity right now for playing a lot of shows.
Yeah, you want to get out.
Just playing with people in general. Like,
yeah,
you know, not committing to tracking and like, you know, okay, pause here. Okay, do all this meticulous sort of stuff.
Yep.
I just want to play. You know?
Yeah, right.
So that's been more interesting lately. And, you know, I kind of get that. You know, that's why like a lot of times if I'm down here, I'll just jam with like the, like I said, the with guitars and pedals and the drums. Cause that's always like my closest way to get sort of to that for a while, but you're like, oh, well, not even to live, but just like playing in a room together, you know, with sort of people or just with like sound in real time. And, but it's like, oh, I would love to like develop this part or like, let's take this groove or whatever, but it's like, oh no, I'm committed to this one loop, you know what I mean?
Yeah
So it's like, oh, I have to go back
and redo it.
Then maybe come up. Yeah, so it's like, oh, dude, come on.
Yeah,
like if I could have like four of me, it'd be awesome, because
that
like,
would be great. Yeah,
you know, but
the tin band,
I mean, yeah, maybe one day.
And is Decliner working with a label? Like, you guys put out a record with?
Yeah, so Omar S, the guy who engineered it and produced and recorded it, he runs Fixie Records.
Okay.
So he put out the record.
Okay.
And it's out on vinyl and you can order it and stuff. It's not out digitally.
Okay.
And there's no, we don't he doesn't do CDs, I believe. So it's just on like a 12-inch.
Just vinyl.
Vinyl, yeah.
Cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, and especially because of like a lot of plants. I mean, there's a lot of delays this year in vinyl. Like,
yeah, I've been hearing reading, that.
Like some plants are like a year out.
Wow.
You know, we finished, I think we recorded that. When did we record? Maybe February or March.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the records back, I mean, within a month or two after he sent them to. Wow. Yeah. It was insane. I couldn't believe how quickly the turnaround was. So we kind of lucked out. He's also kind of a bigger name. You know, he's been into that scene since like the late 80s. So I don't know if that kind of had, that probably had something to do with it, but.
Yeah, they like made it go a little quicker. That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome to be backed. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, put up the money for it, and he has distributors, so like he got it in Europe and the UK and in Juno Records in the UK and stuff, like shops like that. So
nice. I mean,
that was really cool.
It's great exposure
and just like I, after doing like the Moses vinyl, because our full length record we put out ourselves, we did all the vinyl costs and upfront for that. I don't ever want to do that again. Like I loved it and it was great, but I never want to do it again. Like it was a lot of work. You know, we like too. And a lot of money that we like, we broke even.
Okay.
Just that's about great. Which is cool, but like dude, I have like 80 records in my parents' basement that I'm like, what am I gonna do with these?
When are these ever gonna sell?
You know, I mean, I didn't care, like I said, because we recouped the money that we spent on them, but like eventually I don't know what I'm gonna do with them. So
right now Marianne is being pressed to vinyl.
I saw the test presses I thought you played. That's great.
So
who's putting that out?
That's my friend Greg Knowles. He has like a little, it's just him, it's like a little, his own little label called Chumpire. He just like contacted me one day and was like, what do you think about doing a record?
That's great.
Either new stuff or old stuff. And I felt like Marianne was one that I wanted to get pressed and that I had had ideas for pressing. It was great timing. And it was like over quarantine, so I was able to do a good bit of work, like remastering the songs and getting the art together and stuff like that. So yeah, he's just like a really nice guy. He's been in the music scene in Lancaster for a long time.
Okay.
And has backed a bunch of bands just to do like runs of vinyl and stuff. So yeah, super grateful to have him involved. And
is that the first physical release you did? Or you've done CDs, right?
CDs, yeah, yeah. It'll be the first record.
Oh, it is. Okay, great. That's awesome.
Yeah. The test pressings sound great. Yeah, I'm excited. The artwork is really special. Like I really worked hard on the album art, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, because you do all your own art as well, right?
For the most part, yeah. Okay. I have stolen some pictures from my wife, but I'll credit her. But yeah, so some things, like I'm at the point now where the thing that takes the longest for my releases is getting album art for them.
Like, yeah.
Because I'm kind of into trying to put out singles right now as opposed to
full length records.
I've just kind of been thinking that a single or like two tracks are more likely to get a full listen than like 10 tracks once a year, you know? So I'm trying that out for a little bit and we'll see how it goes. I might get so sick of trying to figure out album art that I'll give up, but
do you, apart from like what, you know, we said with like what was originally released as a record, but then became like the two comps, is it now?
Yeah, it's like early songs one and early songs two.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Has everything else been EPs since then, basically?
No, there were a couple. There was Sweet Spell, like that was an album. And
that was
Marianne,
a full record. Okay.
And then Lost Days, A Time for Everything, and then more recently A Box Full of Stars. But but a lot of it has been, I'll release singles before the like the full length thing comes out. I just like to put stuff out a lot. I don't know,
that's great. I mean, that's like amazing. That's what I, like I said, that's I think because of fear or whatever reason, you know, I have like, you know, chosen not to like put out more stuff maybe. You know, or like the stuff that I have that has words or singing is what I'm more so like precious with. Like I have like a project Fellow that I would like upload stuff. It was more like motifs or like kind of sketches of, you know who Bibio is? Do you listen to them?
Oh yeah.
So like that kind of more abstract sort of guitar.
Yeah.
You know, folky sort of stuff, like just loop kind of based and kind of degraded with noise and that sort of thing. So
I remember hearing some of that stuff that you were working on.
Yeah, I would just like do that and then like edit some stock or like public domain footage to it just for like a fun thing to do. But
totally
I never again I like would put stuff like that out for like a couple months, and then I was like, okay,
yeah,
I'm like done doing this now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
thinking about releasing music, when I think of the way that I like to hear, when I think of my favorite artists, like given the choice between getting one album a year from my favorite artist or like a bunch of releases throughout the year, I'm definitely going to take the bunch of releases throughout the year.
Right.
Just because I feel like it's, I like to just hear where that person's at and get to interact with that one thing versus like a full album. I get the, like the merit of a full length record or like a cohesive set of songs that work really well together. But yeah, but right now, I'm just more interested in the working on songs one at a time. For whatever reason, that seems more doable to me now than to like sit on 10 songs for however many months. Maybe some of that is fear of like never finishing them. Like if I don't actually say like this is done and it's going out, that I won't ever do it. But
I was just going to speak to what you just said is so true, because like I think it just changed the way that like people put out records now, you know, like of what you just said of like, oh, a couple songs here or there, or like singles. It's like, that's kind of where the music industry is sort of headed, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, or like what is considered popular music right now is by people who only do that or only put out singles. And it's kind of unfortunate to me that it seems like the people who are like, you know, it seems that's like in pop music and hasn't really necessarily translated in like in more subgenres of indie rock or more underground sort of niche genres of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're like, right.
I couldn't tell you a Katy Perry album, but she put out like four singles in a year or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Or like there's probably numerous examples of that, but like,
yeah.
And that's where like, that's what people are doing. And it kind of sometimes makes me sad because, you know, you'll work on something and it's just like, oh no, you would want somebody to, you know, understand the full body of work, you know,
or
like the full record and not just a couple of songs here or there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why there's like maybe some hesitancy to do singles in like the indie community, because it is such a pop thing. Like,
well, right, like, because especially with the like the pop and the singles, it's like the next one has to be just as banging as the previous. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's not like a deep cut or like stuff.
Yeah.
It can't be
if you're
it's
trying that, to top the charts every time.
Exactly. So it's like that single has to be just as good as the next one, or like people are going to go somewhere else.
That's so true.
And I'm not saying like,
it's so true.
Indie rock is, you know, lacking in that, but I just think it allows for more space of different type of songs. You know what I mean?
You're saying the full album allows for more space of different types of songs?
Yeah. Or like something that like, that might be the single or like the one everybody knows, but like, you know, I'm sure you have tons of records or stuff like that where it's like, oh, actually it's like this third song midway through or something that I seem to gravitate, or like that's the one I think has the hook, or like they explore this really cool intricate section at this point. So it's like I don't know, I get more value out of, you know, record that way rather than like you know, here's the one hit and then and then it's like you're expected to just keep doing that, you know.
Yeah,
that's got to be even, to me, that almost seems harder.
Yeah, no? Agreed. It would be interesting if the model could be flipped and like, you know, on a record, you have room for like the main songs or whatever with like the hooks, and then you have the filler songs or the interludes and whatever, like there's room for that type of stuff. It'd be interesting if you could just like release the filler songs too as just singles and be like, yeah, whatever, here's this song that's like a minute long and isn't like anything substantial in terms of what a single should be.
Right.
That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's people doing that, but are there any bands you're really listening to heavily right now?
I hate that I just picked up my phone, but it's honestly like the best way to
track. Oh yeah, go to what Spotify, whatever. Yeah, I do the same thing.
honestly, a lot of post-punk records that came out this year.
Okay. Like what?
Stuff like this band Dry Cleaning from the UK.
Ah, don't know them.
Fontaines DC.
Okay, then.
I mean, they're pretty popular bands, I guess. I've just really been into that energy, and with like the stuff I'm doing, it's kind of, it's just a good way to like. It, not that I think it's like seeped into it. It just like gets me kind of geared up.
Yeah, totally.
To like play loud rock music and stuff. So that's like fun. I've been doing since like 2019 cataloging. Like I'll find records that came out this week, and so I'll add it to my 2019 or 2020 playlist. I mean, it kind of gets overwhelming after a while, but it's like a good way for me to be like, oh, well, what came out the last couple months that I might have missed or like didn't take time to listen to, because it's just like there's so much every day to listen to.
Yeah,
that I can kind of get sometimes burnt out on it.
What a great way to use that, like a streaming service to like catalog stuff. That's a great idea.
I know, when it's like, oh, a lot of time it's like you're limited to the playlist, and like honestly the algorithm kind of pisses me off a lot of the time to be perfectly honest with you. So it's like, I don't know, it's able to like customize it for myself more, that it's like I'm not hearing the same thing all the time, because that's what they do. I don't get it, but
you're right.
I like that new Buck Meek record a lot.
Oh yeah, I haven't listened to that.
I really like
that.
Him. Yeah, I like, he plays with a lot of cool musicians and just other kind of like session guys that are really good that I like. So that was cool.
Do you listen to Super Wolves at all?
I don't know who that is.
Or I guess it's Matt Sweeney and Bonnie Prince Billy.
They put out a collab record. I do remember seeing that. I don't think I've listened to it yet, but I do. It's good.
Yeah, I've listened to that.
I always like Matt Sweeney, so that's cool.
Yeah, the guitars are great.
I also like that new, you know, the Weather Station. Mm-mm. I really like her records. It's kind of this folky, kind of wispy, but like also this like kind of dance, kind of backbeat sort of groove to it.
Okay.
Like it's not, it's not really that slow a lot of time, but it's got like more traditional instruments.
Okay.
Stuff, so I really like that. I really like this Wild Pink record that came out. He's been doing some cool stuff. I did like the El Obo record. I don't know if you ever got a chance to listen to that.
I got to listen to that again, but I remember you sent that to me.
I was so blown away, because I like Nate and I have a big, you know, heart for that band. And I was like, oh man, I would love, like it was so sad when, you know, they broke up, and then we were in school at the time, and I remember like they would do like this one or two reunion shows. It's like, dude, we're going to drive down from Michigan all the way. And like, it didn't work out. That wasn't going to happen. I was like, oh man, what I would do to just hear another record from him. 'Cause he's so good.
He is so good.
Writes awesome tunes. And then to see, you know, Andy Hall was like, he tweeted something like, this guy just put out the best, or like, we just made the best record of the year or something like that. And I was like, okay, so now there's like a lot of momentum you're putting behind this record, and it sounds great. Like, you know, there's not the aggressiveness of like Color Revolt there, but like all the nuances of his songwriting and lyricism, like that's all there. And like, I think it's like more lush and orchestrated, which, you know, they kind of always were messing with even since, you know, the EP.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And having like this kind of wide sonic soundscape sort of thing.
How did you guys get into Color Revolt? Like, how'd you find out about them?
I used to play in this band called Benthos in college. He would play with Moses before I joined Moses.
Okay.
So Moses was a band I joined, not a band I really started.
Okay.
So the guys in my first band in college, Benthos, and we were an instrumental band, and they grew up in like Dowagiac, kind of South Bend area.
Okay.
Also like a small town in the Midwest. And they like listen to bands like Me Without You and Thrice and Color Revolt, you know, with somebody, you know, in Manchester and stuff. So like I heard that for the first time as a freshman in college and met these guys who were like, you know, I was the youngest in this band. They were all like 20, almost 21.
Yeah.
Like showing me music kind of, I had maybe not gotten, you know, because a lot of the music I found younger was on what I discovered. So it was like, oh, this band is great. And, you know, they toured with all these bands and stuff. And then it was like me showing it to Nate and those kind of guys. And just, we all like kind of obsessed over this band at the same time. So it was cool.
That such a good band. Yeah. I found out about them. I accidentally saw them live, and that was how I like,
that's amazing,
discovered their sound. There used to be this, there might still be this festival called Purple Door. It's like a Christian music festival for like harder rock bands, and Color Revolt played there.
That's wild.
Yeah. I remember we were like in between, you know, we're going from like one stage to another, and like Me Without You was playing later. And yeah, I just heard this band, and they had like a piano on stage. Like it was, they were playing the stuff off the EP, and it was,
oh wow. So that was like, cool. Was that when they had three guitar players?
I don't remember. I don't remember how many people were playing, but I think Jesse was playing the piano, and then they had at least one guitar. But yeah. And so that was like, whoa, I got to find out who this band is. And
yeah. We all became obsessed really quickly. And,
yeah. Yeah. You know. And their catalog was so good. I wish they were still around.
I mean, it was so short lived, like literally one EP, two full lengths. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, there's it's crazy about that band because, that band would tour with like Manchester, or like a band like Brand New, like these big bands. And the thing I would read a lot of time was like Color Revolt was musicians or band's favorite band, you know. They didn't get a big audience, but like the bands all loved that like those were the people who were like, oh my god, this is the best band ever, you know. Which, you know, it's unfortunate that's how it kind of goes sometimes.
Yeah,
especially like, you know, I would see them and be like, these guys work really hard, and like they would tour a lot. I never got to see them, unfortunately. My friends did in Grand Rapids, but
yeah,
it's like, you know, even if like you put out good records, it like, you know, they put out a Plunder, and then Fat Possum dropped them after because it probably flopped. That's what I mean. You know, it's like, no matter how hard you work, that record's awesome. They track that all live.
Oh yeah.
Like they're like, nope, sorry.
Pass.
And so, and then after that happened, three of the members all quit. Jeez. So they Jesse and Sean Kirkpatrick, I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we still love this band.
Yeah, you know, that's
it was always those two guys. Like,
right.
Those, you know, their voices together are awesome. Like, they were the band. And so they're like, well, we'll just, you know, they found a whole new group of guys, and then Nate the Cradle, like,
kept going.
They taught them the song, like, and all of that, like, you know, kind of luck.
Wow. Yeah. You know? I haven't thought about their like story in a long time.
I like to nerd out about stuff like that, you know,
Totally.
Especially with bands like that are smaller, and then like you have that more of a, not that I had a kinship with them, but like it was like, oh, these guys are really trying to do, or we're doing what I was trying to do, but still like,
You can relate to it.
Oh, I can relate to it, but it's like, you know, I hope the affiliation I have with their records, somebody else would kind of get with like what I trying to do, you know. So
totally. Yeah, I get that.
Like they didn't sell millions of records, but like, look how many people are obsessed or like influenced by that band, or be like, oh, Color Revolt is my favorite band.
Yeah.
You know, a band that like you'd probably tell 10 people. I'm sure no one knows who that band is.
Right. Yeah.
But I thought they were like the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
And their music still holds up. Like that's the,
I feel like still listen to it all the time.
Yeah. That's the real test. But What a good band, man.
Yeah.
We could just go on all night.
I mean, I could really about that band.
It's nice to actually be able to talk about Color Vault with someone who like knows them.
Right, sure.
As opposed to being like, I know this great band, you would love them, but you don't know them. So
Like you'd hope that they'd actually go listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, well, I think it's been like an hour and a half at least.
Cool.
And I've pretty much gone through every question I can think of.
Okay.
For right now. Do you have anything you want to add or anything else we didn't get to?
I mean, this is just curiosity. What spawned you wanting to do a podcast?
Yeah, I started it in maybe January or February of this year.
Oh, so you've been doing it a while. Wow.
Yeah, this is the fifth one, I think.
Oh,
so
cool.
I'm only doing like one or two a month, but the main thought was I don't often get to talk with other artists about their approach or their how they approach songwriting or what challenges they face or what their trajectory as an artist has been like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to have room to have a conversation about that with people and just even get to know artists whose work I like and whose processes I'm interested in, especially artists whose genre or like style of writing I don't really know how to do or I sure. really appreciate, you know,
just different from your own basically.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, everything was still pretty much like there were no shows happening. So I was also just like kind of jonesing to talk music with people. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was kind of it. Just wanted to talk with people. And then I also feel like anyone who listens to your music would be interested in hearing your approach to writing and stuff, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And I also felt like people who listen to my music might be interested in hearing my approach and vice versa. Like your audience might be interested in my music. My audience might be, I don't know. I just kind of envisioned like, cause I watch stuff like this all the time. Like
so
artists
do
talking
I.
to, you know
I
what I mean?
Do too.
Like
it's
podcasts.
Like whether it's like recording techniques or like, yeah, I've been on a kick of different podcasts and understanding and hearing the same approach. Cause I'm like, yeah, I like to nerd out on the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. So I just wanted to try that.
I got you. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate it, man. I feel like you expanded well on everything and it was a great conversation for me. I got
I loved it, man. It was fun.
Yeah. So. Cool.
Just want to say thanks again for listening and for supporting the podcast. And thanks again to Tim for taking the time to speak with me about his creative process. I really enjoyed talking with him and I hope that you took something away from it as well. And you should definitely check out the work that Tim has going on. There's something there for everybody.